Welcome to KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Monday, July 17th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, we'll look at post-traumatic stress as a brain injury with a retired fire captain who wrote a book on her experiences with PTSD. And Denver is getting a new mayor this morning, and the CityCast Denver crew sat down with Westward editor to discuss ideas on how he can help the city get its mojo back. After the BBC News headlines, we'll hear the latest commentary from Jim Hightower. Then it's good old CU. Host Joe Juhas will speak live with Dr. Ruben O. Martinez, Emeritus Professor of Sociology and former director of the Julian Samora Research Institute at Michigan State University. At 9 a.m., we'll bring you Counterspin, a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. Then at 9:30, the Groove Thief will be in the Denver studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still coming up, but first, a look at the headlines with KGNU's Benita Lee.
Former State Senator Mike Johnston will be sworn in as Denver's 46th mayor this morning. Johnston went through two rounds of voting, first in a crowded field of 17 candidates, then in a June 6th runoff against Kelly Broff. The new mayor says he will prioritize affordable housing, investing in the homeless population, and improving police diversity in the city. Johnston is facing criticism after failing to attend any of his 28 public forums over the last 10 days. He will be sworn in at 10 a.m. today at the Ellie Calkins Opera House. Last week, Colorado Democratic Senators John Hickenlooper and Michael Bennett promoted two bills in the U.S. Senate that together would protect almost 500,000 acres of public lands in the state. KGNU's Emily Cicillo has more.
The first act would protect almost 70,000 acres along a 70-mile area of the Dolores River. A second bill, the Colorado Outdoor Recreation and Economy Act, or CORE, would protect over 400,000 acres of wilderness, including parts of the San Juan Mountains and the Thompson Divide. The legislators said both bills were developed over the years by bipartisan collaborators, including indigenous leaders, county commissioners, ranchers, sportsmen, and conservationists. The Bureau of Land Management would oversee most of the proposed conservation areas. Together with the U.S. Forest Service, officials would manage the land to protect fish habitat and recreation. While existing livestock grazing would remain, new developments such as dams and mining would be banned from the area. For KGNU, I'm Emily Cicillo.
Immigration advocacy groups have filed a complaint urging an investigation into the misuse of solitary confinement at the privately owned immigration detention facility in Aurora, Colorado. KGNU's Kara Zizzo has more.
The complaint filed by the American Immigration Council, the National Immigration Project, and the Rocky Mountain Immigrant Advocacy Network alleges that Immigration and Customs Enforcement and the GEO group have jeopardized the health and safety of detained individuals. It describes instances of detainees placed in solitary confinement for minor infractions, such as eating slowly or expressing distress, and highlights concerns about safety, the mistreatment of people with disabilities, and lack of professional conduct by facility staff. The complaint includes personal testimonies from individuals who have experienced mistreatment. The complaint calls for systemic reform, the termination of the contract allowing the operation of this facility, and the release of all individuals detained there. For KGNU, I'm Kira Zizzo.
Ames Community College will soon offer a drone pilot program. KGNU's Ivana Livas has more.
Starting this fall semester, students at Ames Community College will have the opportunity to earn an Unmanned Aerial Systems, or UAS, Associate of Applied Science degree. The campus, located in Windsor, will host a new program in a newly built location, equipped with a drone design lab, a takeoff pad, and a landing area for drones. According to UAS Chief Instructor Pilot Jake Marshall, demand for drone pilots has increased, inspiring the creation of the degree program. Marshall emphasized that the industry is in its pioneering stage, and students who obtain the UAS degree will be leaders in the field. The drone job demand is expected to increase exponentially in upcoming years, And Ames Community College is hoping to be ahead of the trend. For KGNU, I'm Yvonne Olivas.
Boulder City Council members expressed overwhelming support Thursday for a mixed-use redevelopment plan that would include a new home for the Boulder Museum of Contemporary Art. The proposed development at 4401 Broadway would include over 17,000 square feet each for the museum and for commercial space. 67 residential units and parking are also part of the plan. However, council members said the proposal would require land use codes that are not currently in place in the North Boulder Art District. According to Boulder Principal Planner Chandler Van Schack, flex zone regulations created in the mid-2000s might offer guidelines for how to accommodate the project. A man died on Lake Pueblo Saturday when a small ski boat sank. According to a press release from Colorado Parks and Wildlife, two other passengers wearing life jackets survived after being rescued by park rangers. The third passenger, who was not wearing a life jacket, drowned when he tried to swim to shore. A popular dispersed camping destination near Gross Reservoir will close for maintenance starting today. According to the U.S. Forest Service, Winnegar Ridge Road will be closed until July 24th. All recreation will be affected by the road closure, which provides access to the west side of the reservoir. For more information, go to fs.usda.gov. A heat advisory is in effect for most of the Front Range today. Temperatures may reach as high as 100 degrees. Denver Parks and Recreation will offer recreation centers as free cooling centers during regular business hours for those who need to get out of the heat. Most Denver Public Library locations will also be available. The National Weather Service is advising people to drink lots of fluids, stay in an air-conditioned room, avoid the sun, and check on relatives and neighbors who may be vulnerable to heat stroke. Sunny and hot along the Front Range with winds gusting up to 22 miles per hour in some areas. In Boulder, a high around 97 and a low around 69. In Denver, a high around 100 and a low around 68. In Fort Collins, a high around 99 and a low around 66. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm Shannon Young. In emergency situations, we know to call 911 for help. Those who respond first are often paramedics and firefighters, and they see all kinds of situations that many of us are unprepared to handle, much less respond to. But what happens when successive traumas accumulate on the brain and in the body? And who helps the helpers? To delve more into these questions, Christy Warren joins me live in the studio. She's a retired fire captain and author of the new book, Flashpoint, A Firefighter's Journey Through PTSD. And she'll be presenting that book tomorrow at the Tattered Cover in McGregor Square. Thanks for coming into the studio this morning.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is awesome.
This book deals with trauma.
Yes.
So a word to our listeners, maybe just a quick warning that the subject matter that we're about to discuss may not be for small kids or sensitive listeners.
Mm-hmm.
But with that said, let's proceed. You got into firefighting through emergency response. You began working as a support crew member in your late teens. What was it about the work that clicked with you and drew you in?
Oh, man. Yeah, I was going to be a doctor, and I decided to take an EMT class and started working on an ambulance and decided that, man, it was just amazing. I did really well there. I was able to really focus in, you know, when we go on an emergency response, and the adrenaline dump was just, you know, it was invigorating, and I was hooked, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
In your first responder capacity, you had to efficiently manage crisis situations, oftentimes with life or death stakes. How did you process that stress?
I don't think I did. And I think that's why I ended up getting PTSD is, you know, we'd go on a call and we'd take care of business. And then the call is over and we'd go on with our day and go on to the next call and go on to lunch or whatever we needed to do. And we had to do that so we could go on to the next call. And I really don't think there was any processing. It just kind of went back in the back of my brain somewhere.
In going into emergency response work, there is, of course, you know, first aid training and certification and physical fitness tests. What kinds of mental health or wellness self-evaluations are part of the ongoing certifications?
Zero. There are none. When I was first going to paramedic school, I learned how to try and resuscitate a baby, you know, that whose heart had stopped, but nobody taught me or told me about how to tell the parents that there was nothing we could do and that their child has passed away. Nobody explained any of that stuff. And that was a constant thing that you'd have to do, is talk to families and have families just stand there while you're trying to save their, you know, severely injured or medically ill family member. Yeah, nobody talked about that. Nobody talked about that. Like, my entire career, there's no training on that at all.
And some of the things that you describe in your book, as far as just really getting underneath the layers that are kind of there to shield you, to be able to compartmentalize, are, for example, the screams of family members mm-hmm. when, you know, a mother has been informed that mm-hmm. her child is dead, or that of a teenager who was stuck in the back of a car that had to be pried open when the mother... he was unaware that the mother in the front seat was already dead.
Mm-hmm.
So it's things like that that can just get underneath that veneer that's kind of helps you get through the day to day. In your book, you described that you reached a point with the accumulated trauma that you had been exposed to and how it caught up with you. Can you explain what the symptoms of that were, so perhaps other first responders or their family members can recognize it early?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, kind of liken it to a box. Like, you know, you go on a bad call, put it in the box, close the lid, and you go on. And, you know, I had one call at a fatal fire, and I tried to put it in the box, and the box was full. And so the lid kind of blew open. And so, yeah, things started happening to me. The first thing I really noticed was anxiety. I never had anxiety before, and I started, every time the tones would go off, didn't matter what the call was for, I'd start feeling this overwhelming anxiety, and that never happened before. I stopped sleeping. I became very irritable, very kind of irrationally angry over things. I started having a lot of nightmares. I'd wake up screaming, and they were all calls, or all dreams about not being able to rescue somebody and, like, trying to. I started crying. I've never, ever been a crier. And I started, like, crying at work, and I'd cry on the way home. And I just didn't know what was happening to me. It was just like my brain was just, it was almost like it was on fire, just like constantly moving and thinking and processing, you know, all this trauma that I'd been on. And, you know, I had like a videotape that would play of bad calls just in my head over and over and over. And it was like being trapped in a movie theater, you know, in a bad movie, and the screen's turned, the brightness is turned up and the volume is turned up, and you can't close your eyes and you can't get out of it. You're stuck in it. And it's absolutely overwhelming and 100%, you know, consuming of your life. And you just want to disappear. You just want it to end.
And you described that finding a group of people who also have similar experiences, being in first response work and having this system of mutual support and recognition of what is going on and how that helped you. This was pre-pandemic, when I think that, you
yeah,
know, before it really like exploded. Do you see that there's at the time there was the demand for these services far outweighed the need? There was a really long wait list. Has that improved any after the pandemic, and how much stress first responders were put under?
No, I would say it's improving, but the demand, or I should say the availability, has not even come close to meeting the demand. In fact, kind of like the more we talk about it, the more people are realizing, like, oh, this is what's going on with me, and it is okay to get help. And so they're asking for help, and there isn't help available. Like, you have to wait like you said, the waiting list to get into this retreat I went to is very long. It's hard to find a culturally competent therapist who understands first responders because we are kind of a different breed. And so, yeah, it's kind of like snowballing on both sides.
Well, Chrissy Warren, you are speaking at the Tattered Cover tomorrow at 6 p.m., the McGregor Square location of the Tattered Cover in Denver. Any folks in particular you would like to see in the audience?
I'd love to see the administration heads of the fire departments and police departments, because they're really the ones that can make change within their department and recognizing that this is an issue and making sure their rank and file are taken care of. And city leaders, too, because they don't understand what we do and they make the policies and they need to know.
Well, we could, of course, get way deeper into this discussion, but that's all the time we have for this morning. Chrissy Warren is the author of the book Flashpoint, A Firefighter's Journey Through PTSD. She'll be presenting it tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. at the McGregor Square location of the Tattered Cover in Denver. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Shannon.
Mike Johnston will be sworn in as Denver's 46th mayor this morning, and he's already making moves. He hired a transition team and packed his calendar with community listening sessions. But will he roll out his micro-communities plan for homelessness that he campaigned so hard on? What about handling the perceptions and realities of public safety that Denver has been struggling with? And the most pressing issue, perhaps, can Mike make downtown cool again? CityCast Denver host Bree Davies and producer Paul Caroli spoke with Westword editor Patty Calhoun to talk about how Denver's new belt buckle wearing mayor could really help Denver get its mojo back.
How did we lose what we had?
It's so interesting because we did this whole feature last year on how Denver lost its mojo and what we needed to do to get it back. Part of it was the pandemic, of course. Yeah. Who got mojo at all during the pandemic? But also by July 2022, you were like, we are tired of Michael Johnston. We've had the same mayor for a long time.
Oh, Mike, you're tired of Michael Hancock? Oh,
Michael Hancock.
Hey, that's not going to be the first time someone does that.
I've typed it about four times.
We're tired.
So we'd had the same mayor for 12 years. We hadn't seen a lot of him during the pandemic. And that was one of my concerns a year ago was there was the whole narrative, Denver in decay, don't go downtown. Whereas if you went downtown, clubs were hopping. Restaurants were doing well. The Golden Triangle, where we are, the museums are packed. So I thought, why isn't Michael Hancock, then the mayor, why isn't he out there every night or afternoon tweeting, here's a live thing, where they are? So that's one of my recommendations right now to show people it is not scary to go downtown. But in July 2022, there was really a strong feeling that you just couldn't go downtown. It was scary. And anyone who was downtown knew that wasn't really the case unless you were in certain blocks that were always scary.
Well, and I just want to clarify, like what we're talking about here is mojo is like the feeling in the city that it's cool to be here, that we like to be here, that we like ourselves, that we like being Denver.
That we're high on Denver. And Denver always had enjoyed a really great reputation around the country. And we've kind of lost that. We'd lost it a year ago. Part of affordability, part of just people talking about the homelessness issue when every city has that. But even though people were still moving here, it wasn't like during the recession when we were the number one place for millennials to go, because that was like, if I'm going to be poor, I'm going to be poor in Denver where I can do creative things. Now the people who have moved here, because you could work remotely, it's like, I don't have to go out. I can go to the mountains and I can afford it because I'm working remotely as an IT person.
Totally.
So
totally.
It's a different group of people moving here.
But it's also just like this. So we're going to be talking now about what our new mayor, Mike Johnston, can do to help change that narrative. Right.
Yeah, and these are super fun ideas. I mean, Patty, these are your let's get into them.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a few of them. I'll pull one off. This was maybe the one I was most excited about, Patty. You want to give meaning to the Mayor's Award for Arts and name one after Joyce Meskis.
You know, this just came to me a while ago. If you look at the Mayor's Award for the Arts, it is almost always the Hall of Fame. It's people who've been doing things for a very long time. But I was thinking about an unsung hero of Denver, especially right now, when you think about where we're not as strong as we were a year ago. First Amendment free speech issues, given the 303 creative decision, a Colorado case went to the U.S. Supreme Court. we should push what a sanctuary we are for free speech. And no one pushed it more than Joyce Meskis.
She was the longtime owner of Tattered Cover, a free speech champion.
Right. Nationally. I mean, she went to the mat. She refused to give up her customers' reading records, the books they bought. I mean, that was, the cops came to her and she said no, and she deserves to be championed more. Another thing on that line, I thought maybe we also need to bring back to literally get all of Denver on the same page, one book, one city. That was a great project when it was going. You recommend a book people should read.
Oh.
And it just kind of died. Hickenlooper had it going.
So Hickenlooper was recommending a book and people would all read it?
Yeah. And it was 10 years ago. And we actually even had one, Bill Owens recommended a one state one book. But it just kind of went by the wayside, partly because it's not easy to choose one.
But it's getting everybody to read the same
book.
Which helps conversations about where we are.
Right, exactly. And especially, they're good Colorado authors. They're good books about Colorado.
Bree, it's your turn. What do you want to talk about next?
Maybe safety. I mean, what a giant term that means so many subjective. It's subjective to every degree. But I think one thing that Mike Johnson talked about, I think all of the candidates did pretty much, was the expansion of the STAR program. I'm really looking for that. If that could be immediately implemented in some way to take the burden off the police department, which we already know is under, they need to hire a ton, right? Well, maybe we put some of that towards expanding the STAR program, because in my neighborhood in the west side of Denver, you can't call STAR. And I was talking to some friends about it the other day. They're like, we have a pretty regular unhoused woman that hangs out in our alley, and you know, we have conversations with her and stuff. And there was a point where she was like, can you call the police for me? And they were like, could we call STAR instead? And so if Mike was able to just get on that immediately, I feel like that would be an easy win.
I also think faster time, and I don't know how you do this that quickly, but you need to. 911's time, can't remember which TV station just did a study.
So scary.
911 time is very slow. And those can be life-threatening issues. And if 911 is slow, 311, where a lot of the 911 calls should probably go, those are really slow. So it's how citizens can really figure out who they need to talk in a fairly reasonable time frame. And of course, with 911, reasonable is quick. When you really need it. So expansion of STAR is great. You know, we have the AIDS Center that started, which is also kind of a STAR-like program, which is kind of one-stop shopping for people who are suffering homelessness or other issues. So expand the programs that don't require trained police officers, and maybe let trained police officers, stop some of the speeders on Colorado Boulevard and the places where we have drag racing going on.
Can I ask you, Patty, so this is so anecdotal to me, but like I live near a busy intersection that is frequented. Alameda and Federal are both strips for speeding and racing, drag racing. And is this a new problem or is this been a build-up problem? But like, I feel like I can't go anywhere in the city where people aren't speeding like crazy.
I think it's built up during the pandemic. That's anecdotal, but from driving around, it's true. And I-25, I mean, I would have to look over what is the responsibility of the highway patrol, I mean, state patrol,
right.
What is the responsibility of the city? But there's no question that you have speeders, and not just speeders, but probably intentional drag racing speeding. I see
totally
that a lot more than I used to. But on Colorado Boulevard, on Federal, I'm seeing it too. And
I was like, just start clocking all those people, ticket them, and use that money to enhance the pedestrian infrastructure around the
right. Or hire some people to answer 911 when the calls come in. So, but I do think we've fallen down on ticketing on things like that. It used to be you could tell when people had their quotas because you'd be going 1 mile an hour over on Spear and you'd get pulled over. I haven't seen anyone get pulled over in a long time.
Should we talk about housing?
Yeah, housing. I mean, that was the biggest issue in the campaign.
Yes.
That's what a lot of people care about. People want to see a new direction here.
Housing is one of those that to say I'm going to come in the first 10 days and have a great idea. One is he obviously has to deal with the property tax issue for Denverites who have managed to keep their homes but aren't going to be able to pay that big property tax bill come December when they find out how huge it's going to be. But the other thing I'm hearing a lot about, and I think he needs to step up, is he had talked about solving homelessness or at least getting it under control in his first term. He needs to do that. And that involves building all those tiny house areas. So he needs
20 micro communities.
He needs to announce a few of those and the locations early to prove they're coming, I think. And that'll take... Well, I think he needs to because people are doubting he'll be able to do that.
But also, Patty, like, how are we going to get these in more neighborhoods? Like, how much of a fight has been put up in so many neighborhoods? My neighborhood hosted one without any struggle, but I just wonder how that part's going
to
go.
Right. And he needs to, for a fast win, he's going to need to prove he's got one worked out.
That's true. Maybe he does. Maybe he's got one. He's just going to announce that day.
This is the thing I'm most eager to see how he handles it. Because he's this plan that he's laid out, it's very ambitious. Mm-hmm. He says he's got the funding for it. But where do the micro communities go is still murky. And we all know it's going to be a big fight.
Right. And so I would say that's one. If we see that he's worked out a compromise with a neighborhood you wouldn't expect early on, that'll be a big win that gets people moving along.
Yeah.
Okay.
Feel good.
Maybe Park Hill Golf Course.
Hey, maybe. Maybe not. Well, that's a lot of ideas. Thanks so much, Patty.
Yeah,
thank you,
Patty.
And that is all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for a commentary from Jim Hightower, and then it's Good Old CU with Joe Uhas. That's coming up just after these BBC News headlines.